joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us at the kitchen table today. It's so nice to have you with us on this beautiful, beautiful day. And I'd like to begin by welcoming our executive producer, Michelle Yark. How are you doing today, Miss Yark?
I am fabulous. Thank you so much. And you?
I'm doing pretty good today. You heard I said Miss Yark. Did that remind me of my buddy John O'Rean up in Toronto, Canada, who called you Miss Yark all the time? You haven't talked to him lately?
I was going to ask you. I have not heard from John O'Rean in a long while.
John O'Rean was one of the top restaurateurs of Canada. In fact, his restaurant Winston's in Toronto had no phone in it. You could not make a reservation, and every table in this restaurant, Winston, was reserved every day of the year by the same families and corporations. So you couldn't get in. And if you didn't show up for dinner that night, that was okay. You were still charged full price. And then, of course, across the glass wall over here, we have David and Derwood. How are y'all doing? Huh?
Doing good. This is the last show. This is the swan song.
This is your swan song as engineer?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, we're happy to see y'all go.
So are we, John. So are we. Feelings are mutual.
I always want to say that to somebody, but I don't mean it with y'all. I love y'all. You know that. Where are y'all going anyway? What are you going to do that's going to be better than this?
Cook at home.
And cook here.
Yeah, but they're not going to be eating like they do here sometimes.
Right. And where are you going to get your little gifts when I make bacon and I make a ham and all that and I make all these experiments and I give to you first? What are you going to do then?
Well, John, we know when those days are. We're going to be here on those days.
And we would welcome y'all. Absolutely. And we have a couple of other great guests in the studio we're going to talk about later. But, Michelle, first of all, you know we have a new engineer.
Yeah, of course we do. Dean Slama.
Howdy, y'all.
I know Dean Slama. Hey, Dean, how are you doing, huh?
We're just cooking in the studio today.
We're having a good time. I think we're beginning a really good life here together, you and us, and then we're going to have these two bars come back and visit just on bacon and ham days, huh?
They're going to be our guest on building that smokehouse that we've talked about for 4 years.
Yeah, if not, y'all can go build it and then come on over here, and then Dean and the gang here will go ahead and make that thing happen. We'll fire the smokehouse up. All right. We're very excited because we're talking about one of my all-time favorite subjects, an ingredient that Louisianians, number one, cannot survive without.
Oh.
And second of all, is probably seen on the tables of, I'm going to say, 99% of all of us who live in the South.
Easily.
99%. Well, I mean, that's a pretty safe number. And it's been said that you can always tell a true Cajun is true. Mm-hmm. If they can walk up to the edge of a rice field and tell you how many gallons of gumbo it takes to cover it. Today we're talking about rice. The staple food of more than half of the world's population. I mean, can you imagine a day in the home of a Louisianian without rice? And I'm just talking about Louisianians. I'm not even talking about the country.
Right. Everything, when you start to think about and name the dishes, we even make dessert out of it.
Well, let me tell you what. In my house, rice was so important, we would begin the day with rajon. You know what rajon is?
Eggs and rice.
Eggs and rice. Yellow rice, rajon. Dad would crack about a dozen eggs into the pot of leftover rice from yesterday that sat on the stove, and then we'd chop ham or sausage into it, and then we'd eat that for breakfast. Whatever may be left, maybe a couple scoops taken out, we would make our riole, our rice custard. And if we were lucky and we had been good children and Daddy had a good trapping season, we'd get raisins to put in it. Just wouldn't be milk and sugar and eggs and rice. It would be raisins, you know? And if it had been too many years since Daddy had a good crop, we'd think there was bugs in our rice pudding. Because we'd forget there was raisins in it. And then, of course, rice in our gumbos and rice on our stews and rice with seven steaks and rice with jambalaya. And I love rice. And I say that it's one of the staples of more than half of the world. Asians alone eat as much as 300 pounds of rice a year, where we in this country...
And that's per person.
At 300 pounds a year per person, and in this country, we are lagging way behind. If you think of all the rice we eat here, we're only eating 25 pounds per person per year, and that is not enough.
I'm sure Louisiana has probably skewed those numbers.
That's right, exactly. We have skewed the numbers. Probably 5% up in New York, and it's 20% here.
Yeah.
Anyway, rice actually has a tremendous history. First of all, in China, where cultivation of both long and short grain rice was well established 4,000 years before Christ.
Unbelievable.
4,000 years. You know, it's about the same time Poverty Point was being founded. They should have been fooling with rice up in...
They may have been importing rice. We just don't know it yet.
The Chinese considered rice one of their five principles in sacred crops.
Yep, a sacred crop.
It was a sacred crop.
There. Nutritional and medicinal value.
No, absolutely. About 2205 B.C., there was no real large-scale production of rice at that time, but the Chinese managed at that time to control water that was desperately needed to flood the rice fields, and rice became the staple grain of the Chinese diet by 800 B.C., a position it has held through the millennium. It wasn't until 200 B.C. that Japanese rice cultivation began, and not surprisingly, it was at the time that the Japanese began to use rice in what else? Sake wine.
That's it.
That's right. You know, a little fun and socialize and even raise rice a little bit higher. Then maybe that's where that 800 pounds a person comes from, right?
Okay.
The Moors, one of my favorite groups as far as food and spice.
I can see that.
Nobody
absolutely
has done more for flavor than the Moors. And when they crossed over into the Iberian Peninsula in the early 700s AD, what did they bring with them? Saffron, sugar, and rice. And that's the only three things you really need for a good rice pudding.
I think those are kind of our sacred ingredients, too, huh?
Yeah, no, it is, if you think about it.
Definitely rice and sugar.
But it was the knights of the Fourth Crusade that really helped to spread these Arabic foods throughout Europe, including rice. Rice arrived in Italy via the Spanish, who planted it at Pisa and on the Lombardy Plain. This was the first European planting of rice outside of Spain. And the arboreal variety grown in the Po Valley, which we've been to in the
yes.
Po Valley. You and I traveled to northern Italy around Parma, where they make the great Parmesan cheese. That's the Po Valley region. The arboreal variety was grown in the Po. That's used to make risotto then and then, of course, now. Again, it was the Spanish conquistadors who brought rice to North America when they founded St. Augustine, Florida, in 1565, Michelle.
And, you know, it was just over a century later that rice was actually introduced to the Carolina colony by Dr. Henry Woodward.
Now, I'm wondering if that's fact.
I think it's fact that it was introduced, but there's a lot of myth as to how it actually first got there. Some say that it was Madagascar rice seed that was given to Dr. Woodward by James Thurber, who was a visiting sea captain. Others think that it was a planter who just imported a barrel of seed because he thought that the Carolina soil was suitable for rice production.
Right, right.
Other people think that a ship from Madagascar was blown off course, docked in Charleston Harbor.
Now, that's the story I hear all the time. That one right there where the ship was damaged and they fixed it.
They fixed it, and hospitable Southerners, even then, you know, helping them out, so much so that Landgrave Smith was given rice seed by the ship's captain, which he planted in the governor's garden. They didn't exactly know what to do with it. They planted it, but rice was kind of a garden curiosity.
Like artichokes and all that were when it first came. Even sugarcane was a garden plant, as was artichokes. So, I mean, it makes sense that rice would have been the
same. What do you do with it? They didn't know how to husk it. They didn't know how to use it for food. So it just kind of was there. By the end of the 1700s, rice was widely cultivated by the slaves in coastal South Carolina. And that popularity continued virtually until the Civil War.
You know, through the Civil War, rice cultivation ended in the Carolinas and Georgia. It increased, though, along the Mississippi River in Louisiana, Arkansas, and Texas. Cheap Louisiana land attracted German wheat farmers. Now, this is very interesting.
That's here come the Germans again.
Here come the Falses. Here they come right now.
Wait, you came earlier than that, remember?
Well, no, but I mean, we started to walk from where we weren't doing much in Hanville to see what they were doing in the rice field. We said, we can do that. Our family was rice farmers.
I know.
Absolutely right. So Louisiana land, of course, attracted these German farmers from the Midwest who began to cultivate rice by adopting their wheat growing methods to the rice growing methods. And today, Louisiana is the nation's third largest rice producer behind Arkansas and California. While rice is an important staple globally, it's a critical food ingredient right here at home.
It is. And we were talking about this earlier. Think of the many rice-based dishes that we have. Jambalaya, red beans and rice, boudin.
Now, Boudin didn't even have rice in it. Boudin was an emulsified sausage, a blood sausage red, and a white sausage from Europe. Arrived here, and all of somebody bit into that blood sausage and said, you know what? Rice would make this better.
Are you sure they didn't say, let's try to stretch it? We got a lot of mouths to feed.
Well, whatever they said, rice made it into place, right?
And we also have rice pudding, as you mentioned, the kala cakes of New Orleans.
Desserts again, right? That
absolutely. Desserts. And can you have a plate of crawfish etouffee or bisque or shrimp etouffee or sauce piquant without rice?
Well, what about stuffings? How do you make a rice dressing or a dirty rice? Every one of our main dishes, our iconic dishes, have rice as a major component.
Absolutely. Rice truly is an integral part of Louisiana's culture and cuisine. You know, we grow mostly long grain rice here, and the numbers vary, but I'm looking at like around 500,000 acres
About a half a million acres.
That's tremendous, right? With the majority of it being in southwest Louisiana, a little bit grown in north Louisiana, but the majority in southwest Louisiana. Well, in the winter, the rice fields hold water, which make the rice fields a vital resting area and food source for migratory waterfowl. So who knew that Louisiana's rice farmers were also conservationists?
Well, y'all, it takes about 120 days to grow rice, and generally it's harvested in July and August, and our wet, I should say, rice paddies can produce 2 crops per year. However, some farmers forego the second rice harvest in lieu of crawfish farming, as I was saying. Crawfish thrive in the rice paddies with no care at all from the farmer, and crawfish and rice growing together seem only right since they end up on the same plate anyway.
We got little entree fields all over.
I remember I thought I had invented something when I said, you know what, I'm going to plant tomatoes, and around the tomatoes, I'm going to plant basil, because I need the two of them going together. And look here, they're planting rice and crawfish in the same field. Oh, my God. The Louisiana rice crop shaped the history and character of many local communities, such as the prairie city of Crowley, Louisiana. In each October since 1936, Crowley has hosted that great rice festival, October the 18th through the 20th this year. Not surprisingly, Louisiana is home to the nation's oldest rice mill. Since 1912, Conrad Rice Mill in New Iberia has been packaging long grain and medium grain rice under the Conrico brand. Anyway, y'all, I guess you figured it out already. Today we're talking about one of the world's greatest commodities, but much more importantly, forget the word commodity, one of the greatest ingredients that enhance the Louisiana diet and adds tremendous flavor to the Louisiana dishes like these etouffees and stews. We have a great guest who's going to be with us to tell us about an explosion. I'll tell you, when I talk about an explosion of rice, this is one of the best you're going to hear about. So don't you dare go anywhere. We'll be back in a minute. Michelle, put the rice pot on the fire.
In January, it's so nice while slipping on the slide.
Hi, everyone. This is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we've got Ruthie Foster on the legendary Rhythm and Blues Cruise and Bernard Allison at the Memphis in May Bill Street Music Festival. That plus the late Jerry Wexler in his feature host segment, On the Record. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
Host Megan Brown for Encore. Join me as we journey through the continuing timeline of our culture. We'll discover the music, relive festivals, and get to know the people. Sunday afternoons at 3 here on KRVS.
From the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, this is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, now broadcasting in HD radio technology.
Table and a menu. ISIS back in this oriental venue. Hungry for a little chop suey. I want Chinese, not Hong Kong suey.
You know what you want?
Yo, can't decide. Column A, column B, I like fried. barbecued spare ribs, my fingers I'm licking, waiting for the main course, kung pao chicken spicy. I mean hot like a stir fry, if you can't take it, order Mugu Gai Pan. Means chicken and mushrooms, while you're on the soup, the food is here too soon. No substitute.
I love that.
I was waiting for my rice part to get in. Y'all, I tell people all the time that you only need to tune in to Stirring It Up just to hear the music. You don't need to hear one word. I keep saying we're going to do an album of Stirring It Up music. You know, last week we did an original with Michelle on chili, where we had a band talking about chili, and Michelle said, beans? We don't put beans in chili. We even have original music here. Anyway, welcome back, y'all, to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. And, of course, today we're talking rice in terms of nutritional value, value production. Rice is, without a doubt, and I'm saying it again, the most important crop in the world. And today, of course, to talk rice, we need to have not only a special guest, but a special rice.
Absolutely.
And you're going to introduce it.
Yes, indeed. As you've been explaining, rice has a long history here in South Louisiana. We pride ourselves on having a superior product, and we continue to increase the production and the yields. Well, a few years ago, a new rice took Louisiana and the nation, for that matter, by storm. Jasmine rice. Not jasmine. Jasmine rice. To talk with us about jasmine rice is Nina Camacho, better known in the culinary world as
the Rice, the woman,
rice,
the rice
Lady.
Lady.
She was raised, educated, born in New Orleans. She serves as the National Events Director for Jasmine Rice. Of course, you know, her position is ever evolving. It includes everything from public relations to brand management, food service, and of course, she has to go and visit with people like you.
Like get abused at these food events.
Huh? I love it. I love it. You know that.
Thank you so much for being with us, Nina.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
You know, she kind of covers the ground like rice during the harvest season.
Like
she's everywhere.
She covers the ground like the dew, as we say, huh?
I know that you've mentioned seeing Nina at a bunch of different food events promoting jasmine rice. You know, you probably didn't know, Nina's been a DJ.
Right, she's been a DJ, right.
She's been a television news director.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
She's been a retail visual merchandiser.
Well, that's why she's so good at what she does. I mean, she's multi-talented. She reminds me a lot of myself. You're just great. Hey, welcome. Let me give you my official welcome as well. We see each other all the time. You've been in and out of restaurants. It's always great to see you, and now we have you here for ourselves. Thanks so much for being here
with us. I'm so honored to be here.
You know, before we talk specifically about Jasmine Rice brand, and you mentioned it, that's Jasmine.
Yeah, J-A-Z-Z, Jazz.
Yeah, no, Jazz.
Men.
By the way, was that a marketing term to put that Jasmine in there, or somebody actually named it that?
One of our owners, George Chin, decided he wanted to make a little play on the
rice. Oh, that was really great.
Yeah, though. And we even have Louis Armstrong as our hero on our labels, on our logo.
Was it kind of hard to get that permission? Or?
Well, we did have to donate money to the Louis Armstrong Educational Foundation, mm-hmm. and it is for supporting jazz scholarships and their museums and everything.
Tell us a little bit. I mean, it is a play on words, the name, but it is used to describe a very unique and flavorful product. Tell us a little bit about the rice. What separates it? What makes it apart from the other rice out in the marketplace? And why would I buy it?
It's the aroma. Once you cook our rice, when you cook regular rice, it doesn't really smell like anything. But when you start cooking our rice, it's so fresh since it comes from Louisiana that you'll smell. My kids have said, you know, Mom, it's just like going to the show because it has kind of like a nutty aroma. It has kind of like a popcorn aroma, a little bit of a floral aroma, and it just smells good. It makes the dishes awesome, awesome, awesome. So,
in Louisiana, I normally think of the two schools of rice. You steam rice or you boil rice, and you're looking for either a rice that's going to be dry or one that's going to kind of cling, a little starchy, depending on what we're going to cook. If we're doing a jambalaya, there's jambalaya cooks who like rice to be grain for grain, so to speak, and they measure on that. There's others who like that little stickiness to it so that all of the meat and flavor kind of clings together. How do you describe, or is there a property of the rice that changes the texture? Is it a stickier rice? Is it a drier rice? rice, or can you make it either way?
You can make it either way. With our brown rice, it is pretty wonderful with the jambalayas. You cook it a little bit drier, but with any other dish, like with the gumbos, you do want it to have a little bit more bite to it, so the gumbos can be absorbed into the rice, and then you have that flavor within the rice and the gumbo all together.
You started to mention the founder a little while ago. You tell us a little bit about him or the process. How did he wake up one day and say, my God, I have something?
Well, it was actually four friends, childhood friends, who grew up all in the New Orleans area, and they saw an uptick in the price of rice, the commodities of rice. Jasmine rice, in particular from Thailand, jumped sky high. So they said, well, why don't we become rice farmers? Because they wanted to help the state of Louisiana. We had just come out of Katrina and everything, and we wanted to try to bring money back into the state. So they went to the LSU Ag Center. Dr. Steve Linscomb, who is one of the director of the Rice Research Station at LSU, said, well, you know, we have over 40 brands of rice that we have developed. Why don't you try to use the jasmine variety? Because they were looking at trying to grow the jasmine variety from Thailand here. So we were growing LSU's brand variety of rice. And they actually renamed it to Jazzman, J-A-Z-Z-M-A-N, because they really liked our name for it too. So,
now, what's the popularity of jasmine rice in the U.S.? Obviously, they saw a need in the market.
Among Asians, it's the rice to get. And until now, it's always been the Thai jasmine rice that has been developed. But we're actually the very first brand branded in the United States. Very cool.
Now, you know, we're all proponents of rice, as I mentioned. I mean, we cannot cook or eat or even talk about food without talking about rice in some fashion. And when we talk about varieties of rice, I think you made a pretty powerful statement when you say normally you cook rice and it's just there. It's rice. There's no aroma.
Exactly.
There's nothing you're really searching that much for other than just the starch to put something else on. But yet when you talk about jasmine rice, you talk about taste and you talk about quality and you talk about Asia and you're talking about aromatics and all of that. Talk a little bit more about that for us, because when a customer walks into a store and picks up that particular brand of rice and bring it home, what are they looking for when they cook it in? What's going to make them come to love that rice immediately versus the rice that they're having now?
For me, it's been mostly educating the public, because they're so used to parboiled rice. They're used to bland tasting rice. So that's why I've been going around. I'm so glad chefs like you have been seeing how good it is. It's a premium rice. When I go into a demo or anything, I try to get them to try the rice first. It's always word of mouth. It's always taste that will get people to tell each other. So it has really taken off in the Vietnamese market here, especially in Louisiana and the United States as well. So,
well, you know, it's interesting that the rice has flavor. And in fact, one thing about Louisiana food is that rice is always a component of most of our dishes, and our food is so incredibly flavored. I mean, we're always adding spice and seasonings and the trinity of onion, celery, bell pepper, the dark brown root of many of the dishes we cook. So now with the enhancement of flavor from the rice, we should be getting real explosions of flavor in Louisiana.
Exactly,
cooking.
Exactly. And all the chefs have noticed that and have used rice as one of their go-to ingredients as well. And using our rice as a go-to ingredient, I'm very proud of that.
Absolutely. Well, I bet you are. I bet you are.
So is there a process of selecting the network of farmers who actually grow this variety?
That actually is a trade secret.
Oh, that's the trade secret. I'm being a John Falls here.
The LSU Ag Center is hand-in-hand with Jasmine Rice to figure out which farmers can grow our particular variety.
Now, I realize Louisiana is a great market for rice in the South, just an extensive market for rice. But how has the acceptance been, and where is it outside of the state of Louisiana? Where are you seeing the rice moving to Nashville?
It's everywhere now. It has taken off on the West Coast. It's taken off on the East Coast. We're working on the Midwest as we speak. If you would look in almost all of the Asian grocery stores within the East Coast and West Coast, you will find us there.
You mentioned Asian a couple of times, that it's one of the most popular rice of the Asian market. Now, of course, the Asians being the ultimate authority on rice, what are they looking for in the rice that makes that particular one stand out as their favorite, since they're so knowledgeable in it? What makes it different from, say, one of your regular rice here?
In Asian cultures, they use chopsticks to get rice. Well, ours is a little bit more clingy, so it'll stick to the chopstick, so you can get an amount into your mouth.
Okay. And I guess that's a property you were just mentioning about the gumbo being absorbed into it as well. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. What about international distribution? I realize you're here, and now you're going to...
We are sold in China and Hong Kong and Canada and Australia. Yeah, yeah.
But you're only like 2 years old, right?
And?
And you've done a tremendous job. Oh, my gosh.
Well, it's not just me. It's a team effort. I'm concentrating more on the national front. Our owners are great proponents of going worldwide. You know, anything to get Louisiana out there worldwide, we're there.
Now, you're traveling in chef's kitchen. I've seen you in our kitchens, of course, a lot. You're everywhere. Let me tell you, you are a perfect example of one of the greatest marketers of product.
Thank you.
Not only are you passionate about your work, but you're everywhere. You're devoting the time, and I know your folks must be very happy with your work. I can tell you from the consumer side that it's great to see someone like you always involved in things. What are you finding unique? I mean, you know, all of us chefs are always trying to do something interesting. Any dishes or anything that you're seeing people doing with your rice that you said, now that is unbelievable? Any competitions you've seen?
We've had so many. In your culinary school, we had someone who just won in the San Pellegrino competition with an Abita braised jasmine rice under some Gulf fish. Oh. And that was pretty amazing.
From Nickel State.
Poppy Tooker has made some kala. And she's been promoting us all over the place as well. I'm so happy about that. We've been in the James Beard House with several different chefs who have used our rice in crawfish rice pudding and Bananas Foster rice pudding and savory and sweet. And it's just everywhere. We've had all kinds of examples of using rice.
You have a great list of recipes on your website, too.
We are updating our website, and we now have a chef's corner that we have chefs from all over that use our rice, and we want to promote them just as much as they promote us.
Well, it's also a great, great vehicle because, in all honesty, when you think of an ingredient in the American marketplace, it's a staple.
Yes.
It's a commodity. Everybody thinks of rice as, oh, well, we have to have rice. But in Louisiana, rice actually follows our holidays of the year. Special types of dressings, as we mean, our rice stuffings, our rice, our jambalayas during the social season of the summer when everybody's out cooking in the backyard. Rice is all over the place, needless to say, in Louisiana. But for people to be able to go to a resource like a site that has recipes from all the chefs and recipes from home cooks and recipes from the industry itself, it's a fabulous, fabulous resource. What is that site?
JazzmenRice.com, JAZZMEN, rice.com.
And available in most of your large chain stores?
We're working on it. We're in the Rouse's, we're in the Whole Foods, Associated Grocers at the moment, and a lot of the Asian grocery stores are selling our little bags.
Is it safe to say that you can pretty much substitute a jasmine rice for most anything that you cook?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. If you wanted it to be a little more al dente, just add a little less water. And I do tell people when we're cooking the rice, have you heard of the one knuckle method?
Yep, you put your finger in the pot like that and you bring the water up to your knuckle.
First knuckle. For chefs in a hotel pan, it's a 5-4 measurement, 5 liquid to 4 rice. But it all ends up to be one knuckle.
Every one of them. I remember my grandmother used to say that. She said, we used to have a cup that told us how much water to put in, then the cup broke. But it's always just up to your first knuckle.
Right, it's always the first knuckle.
So you put the rice in the pot, and then you start adding water. You put your finger until it touches the rice straight up, and then you pour till you hit your first knuckle, little thing right there, and it's always going to come out perfect. Now, let me tell you, I'm doing a demo on rice. In fact, I'm doing a demo on the two different cooking methods that normal kitchens use for rice. I'm going to do a boiled method, and I'm going to use the steam method. And the steam method, I always do 1.5 water to rice. And in the boiling method, I just fill the pot up with water, boil it, a little salt, throw the rice in, and just test it every now and then for doneness. What am I doing right and wrong in that class? What should I tell them more about?
I'm surprised you're not.
I'm going to use jasmine rice.
Harassing her to be in your class.
I'm not going to harass
her. Please.
I was telling I was doing rice on that. So tell me about it. In a class like that, with I have 35 students this year sitting in front of me. I'm going to do the boil method. I'm going to do the method. Of course, we're not going to use your rice cooker pot, Michelle. We're going to use the water in our lids. Tell me what I should tell them.
One cup of rice to 1.5 cups water is safe. It's a little bit salt if you wanted to. I quit using that because when I went to chefs when I demonstrated rice for them, they're like, you've got salt in here. I'm like, yeah. So I don't put salt in there.
Well, I tell them all the time, rice does not come seasoned. There's your salt.
There you go. There you go.
So you're telling them like on a 1 cup, because a lot of people cook 1 cup of rice.
Right.
Probably a general serving of rice at home for a family of four or so.
It's like 1.5 cups of water, yes.
Yeah, so 1.5 cups of water. And is the preferred method, even though, of course, you can cook it anyway, but is the preferred method at home that stovetop steaming of rice versus boiling of rice?
The boiling of rice, I haven't used it as much, mainly because I don't have the colander. I just have a rice cooker, turn it on, and
Plus, I'm telling people, you're throwing away so much of the flavor of rice when all of the, especially in your rice, when you're looking for that flavor.
I don't even wash my rice.
Right.
I don't. Some people can, and you can rinse it till you're clear, but in my rice, it's already done. I mean, you can pick a few little stones if you see it, but usually you don't. So we just put the water in the rice, stir it up, and then leave it alone.
My students asked me one day, you wash your rice? Why do you wash your rice? Is there dirt on? I said, well, no, the thrashing method of removing the hulls of the rice leaves the powdery starch on the outside of it.
In the brown rice, yes.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, you want to rinse the excess of that starchy powder or coating off. So I think that's, my mayor Zerang always did that, so we followed suit. But I don't wash rice anymore either. I just kind of throw it in. I throw a cup and a half of water, a little bit of salt. I put a little pat of butter in it, and I bring it to a simmer. I throw my rice in, stir it once, bring it back to a boil, put a lid on it, turn the fire to low, and I set my time for 30 minutes, and I go watch the news.
There you go. You got breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
That's exactly right. Or dessert.
There you go. There you go.
Anyway, y'all, we're still talking about rice. We're going to cook a couple of dishes as well. And Jasmine Rice, again, y'all, one of the great, great brands. And your website, again, will be on our website, too, jfalls.com. When you go to jfalls.com, you're going to have all of the information on Jasmine Rice. Plus, remember, you can listen to the show. We actually stream that show every week. If you love it so much, as I'm sure you do, you can listen to it like every day a couple times.
Thank you. I can tell all my friends throughout the world that. Thank you.
They do around the world. It streams all around the world. We have a lot of great guests who listen to the show. So we're going to take a quick break, y'all. And when we come back, we're going to cook a little rice dish. We're going to talk a little bit more about what some of the books you might find talking about rice. And you don't want to miss any of it. We'll be back in a minute.
Well, goodbye, Joe. We got to go now. We gotta go for the people down the bayou. Well, my Ivana, she's really wild, and me, oh my, oh. So now we're gonna have big fun on the bayou. We'll jump a line across this pine of filet gumbo. Cause tonight I'm gonna see my Jeremy, oh. Pick guitar and you feel free, Charles and Miguel. So now well, the kinfolk come now to see five dozen. Well, you dressed in style and you go home while I'm there to get you. Son of a gun, we're gonna have big fun on the bayou, yeah. Jump a line from the...
Support for KRVS comes from Festivals Acadien et Creole, coming up Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, October 12th through 14th. In Girard Park, here in Lafayette, featuring Louisiana music, food, and crafts. For more information, the website is festivalsacadien.com.
Hello, I'm Josh Corinet. Join me this week for fabulous vintage recordings from back in the day. Oumou Sangaré, Abdelgadir Salim, Los Van Van, Samba Mapangala, and others. That's next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Looking for a youthful perspective on classical music?
Well, I'm going to play the Liszt Transcendental Etude No. 7. It's very exciting and energetic, and there's hard-hitting parts and soft parts, and overall, it's a pretty good piece.
Look no further than From the Top. Join me, Christopher O'Reilly, for our 10th anniversary season, each week right here on NPR.
Tuesday night at 7 on KRVS.
Soy Fernando Pérez Villar. Únanse a mi programa Espacio Latino este domingo a las 5 p.m. para que escuche buena música latina e información sobre la cultura latina aquí en el sur de Luisiana.
That's Espacio Latino, coming up this Sunday evening at 5 here on KRVS.
Regional Public Radio for Acadiana. KRVS-FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Ride some gravy, some will tell you, it would make you fat. But when you're a little boy in Louisiana, the first word that you learn to say is, where that gumbo at? Love that gumbo early in the morning. It's at noon. Gumbo.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. And I want to remind you all that we're talking about one of the world's greatest commodities, rice. And of course, Michelle, they can learn more from our Facebook page there and share with us some of their great rice recipes.
Absolutely. And the address, facebook.com, of course, /stirringitupradio, STIRRIN, Stirring It Up Radio.
Nina was telling us about the fact that it's rich in complex carbohydrates, low in fat, packed with vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and fiber. And you know what? Inexpensive, and that's not good for the rice farmers. They work too hard for inexpensive product. We got to get the price of that rice up, I think. No, it is inexpensive, y'all. And rice can be stored indefinitely in a cool, dry place. And, of course, it's one of the things that we in Louisiana cannot do without. And, Michelle, I know each and every one of these shows, you have a good book recommendation on the subject from our own library that we ask people to build their libraries with as well. What are you coming up with today?
Well, you know, a few years ago, we were doing a book signing at Barnes & Noble in Lafayette, and we met a fellow named Neil Bertrand.
Yeah.
He's a Louisiana native, grew up in Opelousas. He founded, and he's the owner of Cypress Cove Publishing. And that day, he was in Barnes & Noble autographing books because he is the author of Rice Cooker Meals. And I thought that this was kind of interesting. Neil likes one-pot flavorful meals. A lot of us have rice cookers. He likes for something to be ready in under an hour. So he started experimenting. He started going to the grocery store, getting different ingredients, and he came up with all of these rice cooker recipes. So I was flipping through it, and it's kind of amazing. I didn't know you could cook spaghetti and meatballs in the rice cooker, or crawfish fettuccine, or other pastas, or do crawfish boiled potatoes. So it was just kind of interesting. Yeah, he cooks rice in his rice cooker, but he has a whole bunch of other things that he does with it, too. I also found, for our historians out there, there's a great thesis written by Lawson Babineau Jr. It was written in 1967, but it's a history of the rice industry of southwestern Louisiana. Great piece, a lot of historical information about the growth, talking about the wheat farmers who came from the Midwest, and all about the industry. So, nice little piece if you're interested in more about the history.
I am. That's great. Thank you so much for telling us.
And I like the idea of him taking his rice cooker because a lot of people today, you know, I hear so many people coming to me and they'll say something about their rice cooker or about their crock pot. And it reminds me that people are always looking for convenience foods. They're all looking for great tasty recipes, healthy recipes that can be cooked fast.
All of us have jobs. So when we get home in the evenings, you don't want to just pick up fast food, but you want to eat food fast. So if you can have a rice cooker or, like you said,
a slow cooker.
A slow cooker, mm-hmm. Absolutely. You can have some great meals. And there are a couple of great slow cookers on the market.
A couple of good fun facts here before I give you your recipe. In 1787, while he was serving as U.S. Minister to France, Thomas Jefferson, one of the great foodies of the world, took a tour of northern Italy where he saw their short grain rice growing. Thinking it was an inferior product, he tried to convince the Italians to import Carolina rice over to Italy. His attempts failed, but he got a sample of Italian rice to ship to friends in South Carolina. Importation laws being what they were, even then, he learned that Lombardy forbade the export of unhulled rice under the pain of death. Can you imagine that? Well, Jefferson managed the situation by bribing one of the workers on the ship to smuggle a sack of rough rice from Genoa, where it could be spirited onto an American ship. And then he thought to himself, well, you know, I probably should pocket a few grains of rice, too, while I'm at it, just in case the other one doesn't get through, which he did. He filled up his pocket with rice and sent those grains with cultivation instructions. And when Jefferson returned to his Parisian post, he had rice husking machine in tow to bring back to America as well.
So he stole some rice, came by a rice husking machine.
Came by one, I'm sure. He was quite adventurous in all foods, and it's no doubt from ice cream to ice cream machines to rice husking machines as well. 50% of all of the world's rice is eaten within 8 miles of where it's grown. Nina, did you hear that? Within 8 miles, 50% of the world's rice. Today, Louisiana, Arkansas, California, Mississippi, Texas, Missouri produce varieties of virtually all of the rice in the U.S. We were talking about rinsing a while ago. You know, some of my facts say that rice should never be rinsed before cooking. Why?
Some of them are enriched with extra vitamins. Our jasmine rice is not enriched, but it still holds all of its flavor. It's just a matter of preference.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, a common Chinese greeting translates as, have you eaten rice yet? Do you know that to be a fact? More than 1 billion people throughout the world are involved in rice growing.
A billion. Think about that.
A billion people today.
But it would take that many to supply the world, don't you think?
It does.
Y'all, you want to remember when walking through a store, there's long grain rice. You have your medium grain rice out there that kind of clings together a little bit more than the long grain. You have your short grain rice, soft and certainly cling together, almost a little round kernel. You have your sweet and waxy rice. There's all kind of different. Your aromatic rice varieties out there. And then, of course, you have your basmatis, and you have your black rice and your Japonica rice, my God, it keeps going on and on and on. And, of course, jasmine rice, that long grain Thai rice with that unique aroma. And that's the one we love so much, right?
We do, we do. But it's not Thai rice. It's Louisiana-grown rice.
Well, I know that it wasn't. Wasn't it Thai originally?
It was Thai, but even the LSU Ag Center developed its own version.
Oh, I see. It's all well. Jasmine, okay, well, that clears that up.
Yeah.
anyway, talking about rice, whether you're using all of those different varieties, I recommend jasmine to be used in my recipe here, Michelle. Do you want to hear about my riolet, our rice pudding, or do you want to hear about our raised collard cakes?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
me too. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Let's start off with the riolet, because the riolet is one of my favorite. That's that rice pudding dish. It takes about an hour to make. I love it warm too, by the way. I love the rice pudding warm, but we used to eat it cold. Cold rice pudding is really good. And Mary Fascio always had a big bowl of warm rice pudding on the table. A big custard, whatever. We had a lot of eggs and milk, you know, so she always made something. Anyway, rice custard, y'all, like flan and bread pudding, is considered a premier Creole dessert, and many custard-based desserts evolved, as I say, out of the need to use up eggs and milk from all these German communities, and by adding rice to the custard, it became an unbelievable dessert. So I begin with 1 cup of rice. I'm going to have 1.5 cups of water, 1 tablespoon of butter, 1 teaspoon of sugar in the recipe, and what I'm actually going to do, I'm going to go ahead and in a sauce pot, I'm going to bring the rice, the water, the butter, and the sugar to a rolling boil. And then I'm going to reduce it to low. I'm going to cover it. And remember, that's that 1.5 to 1 I was talking about a while ago. And I'm going to put a cover on. I'm going to cook it for 30 minutes. I'm not going to take the lid off. I'm not going to stir it. I'm going to just let it cook. And I will not uncover it. Then I'm going to remove it from the heat and then allow it sit and cool slightly. And then in a mixing bowl, I'm going to whisk together my eggs. I have about 4 eggs because this is a very eggy dish. We're making a custard. We're going to combine that with 3/4 cup of sugar, and we're going to whip it until cream, pale, and yellow. As you know, these ribbons will start to form. And then I'm going to combine the rice mixture with the milk. And I'm going to kind of bring that to a little boil. Remember, the rice has been cooked. Now I'm adding the milk to it. I'm going to add lemon zest, just a little bit of zest to it, about a lemon or orange. I've even seen lime going into it.
But, oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Satsuma in it, a sweet. You can use a tablespoon of orange or lemon zest. A little scrape of nutmeg, about 1/8 teaspoon of nutmeg. And, of course, a tablespoon of pure vanilla extract. So I'm going to put that 2 cups of milk with the 3/4 cup of sugar. I'm going to whip all that together, and I'm going to bring it to that little boil. And then, Michelle, I'm going to mix it all up together. I'm going to remove it from the heat, you know, and mix it all together. Then I'm going to pour that with all those beautiful herbs and seasoning into a bowl. And I'm going to go ahead and put some raisins in it.
You're going to spice it up. It's been a good season.
Yeah, it's been a good trapping season. Anyway, y'all, that recipe is going to be on the site. And then on the collard cakes, you got that recipe over there, Michelle? Now, the Africans, you know, brought a lot of the techniques of using rice from Senegal over here. And in addition, they created these great rice cakes. And, of course, there's a great story of how they sold those after high mass, right?
Right. Back in the day, Catholics, the majority of folks in Louisiana are Catholic, they would have to fast before Mass. And it's not like today when we fast an hour before Mass. They would fast a whole day.
You have to fast an hour before Mass?
You're supposed to, and that includes chewing gum.
Oh, my God, I'm just learning that right now.
But because people had fasted, by the time they came out of Mass at noon, they were starving.
Oh, they were famished, I'm sure.
So a lot of the African slaves, actually, were allowed to sell items outside of Mass, small pies, and even some gentlemen had oysters on the levee that they would
But people would promenade on the levee after.
Absolutely.
At St. Louis Cathedral in New Orleans, and of course the oyster shuckers were out there as well.
But can you imagine walking out of church and somebody's there with a hot collard cake?
Anyway, y'all, the collard cakes are made with 1 cup of jasmine rice, 1.5 cups of cold water, 1 teaspoon of salt, and 1/2 teaspoon of butter. And, of course, same process. We're going to put the rice in the water and the butter and the salt into a pot. We're going to bring it to a rolling boil, reduce it to low, cover it. And 30 minutes later, we're going to have perfectly cooked rice. If you do not stir and do not remove the cover, you can have a good rice. Michelle, when done, stir the rice and place it in a large mixing bowl. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll kind of cool the rice a little bit. It's a little sticky. Using the back of a wooden spoon, you mash the rice kind of along the side of the bowl to cool it slightly. You with me?
Okay.
Now, you're going to take 1 package of dry yeast and 1/2 cup of warm water. You're going to mix the package of yeast in the water, and you're going to allow it to bloom, as we say, which means that the yeast will start to grow in the cup, and it's going to start to foam and all of that, and it's going to be pretty interesting. Then you're going to stir the yeast into the rice and kind of mix thoroughly with a spoon for approximately 2 minutes to make sure that it's well distributed through the rice. You with me? You can cover the bowl of rice with the yeast in it with a towel and just put it in a warm place. Now, a lot of people will actually allow that to rise overnight.
For the
next morning, yeah, absolutely. But I just let it rise for a couple of hours until it's nice and raised. And then once raised, I blend in 3 large eggs beaten, 1/4 cup of sugar, 1/4 teaspoon of grated nutmeg. You see these aromatic, these nice flavors of the nutmeg. You can even put some vanilla extract into it if you want to at this point, the sugar. So you're making a nice little sweet blend with some aromatic spices, and you're going to fold that into the risen rice and yeast, and you're going to kind of whip all of that together. And while that's just sitting there and getting to know each other, so to speak.
Getting acquainted.
Yeah, getting acquainted. You're going to actually take about half a teaspoon of salt and a 1 1/4 cup of flour. That's the base for now making the cake out of it. So once all of that, you're going to mix that in. You're going to kind of fold it all together again to blend the flour really well into the mixture. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
So then, now, you're going to go ahead and you're going to roll these into little balls about the size of a golf ball, something about that size. Then, y'all, I'm going to take my home-style deep fryer. You have one of those?
I do.
Those are the best because you can buy them inexpensively. You got two baskets in them. You can put the oil. Normally, there's a little cap on top of the oil that you can cover the top of the little fryer so you can keep the oil in it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can use a pot with a thermometer, and you're going to bring that temperature up to probably around 350 degrees maximum. And then you take one of these little ice cream scoops,
uh-huh.
and you're going to scoop a little ball out of that, and you're going to drop it into that hot oil about 4 or 5 cakes at a time until golden brown on all sides. They're going to float, by the way, when they're done. You don't have to worry about it. Then you're going to take it out, drain it well on mm-hmm. a paper towel or whatever, and then you're going to put it on a platter and coat it with powdered sugar. Now, I always serve it with Steen's cane syrup.
That's a good way to serve it.
That's right. So you have the powdered sugar of the sugar industry of Louisiana. You have jasmine rice going into the collard cake. You have the syrup from Steen's cane mill over here. I mean, what else do you need to show you patriotic?
Man.
Huh?
Throw in some pecans in.
Oh, yeah. You can throw some pecans in.
Put a little wedge of satsuma on the side.
And, y'all, anyway, where all of the information is going to be on the website. And, Nan, I want you to give your website out one more time for Jasmine.
Jasmine Rice, JazzmenRice.com. And we're also on Facebook as well, Jasmine Rice, on our Facebook page. And Twitter.
And Twitter.
Oh, yeah. We do all that.
How many recipes you figure you have on that page?
We are ever growing as well, and we are building up our Chef's Corner Rice page as well. So right now, it's I can't tell you because we're changing it around, and I'd really love to include these recipes
you can
as
include,
well.
You can include both of those, absolutely. And y'all, I want to remind you again, if you go to jfalls.com, not only will you get all of the information from Jasmine Rice, but you will also have a link to their site, and you can actually click on to the radio show. Just go to Starting It Up, the radio show, and you can actually listen to the show again all week long. But mainly, we want you to go to Facebook.com. You want to go to Stirring It Up Radio, Stirrin Up Radio, and let us know what you want to hear. Let us know what you think about the show. Let us know about topics you want to hear about. And let us know about some of your cooking extravaganzas. See you next week.